Welcome to a special edition of Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today we bring you a story of murder, of injustice that took decades to correct, and of forgiveness. So imagine yourself going about your life, and then you're accused of murder, and nobody believes you when you say, "I didn't do it." You're convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life without parole. For decades, you make your case, you mount appeals, you try to convince those in authority that you are innocent, but nobody listens, and the years drag on.
16 or 17,000 days and nights, miserable, lonely, stressful nights that I had to spend thinking about the fact that my life had been taken away from me for no just reason at all.
But finally, the Michigan Innocence Clinic at the U of M Law School hears about you. They start digging, and they discover a key witness not only lied, that witness committed the murder. And at last, after a total of 47 years in prison, you are freed. That is what happened to Richard Phillips. The Detroit native was in his 20s when wrongly convicted of the 1971 murder of an auto worker named Gregory Harris. Today, Phillips is 72. He is the longest-serving exoneree in U.S. history, and yet he carries no bitterness for those lost years.
If I ever want anybody to forgive me for the things that I've done in the past, then I also have to do the same thing.
Richard Phillips will be here to tell us his story later in the program. But first, we turn to David Moran, the co-founder of the Michigan Innocence Clinic at the U of M Law School. David, how did you all become aware of Richard's case?
We became aware of it because someone tipped us off. And this person told us that a man named Richard Palumbo, who had been convicted along with Richard Phillips back in 1972, had gone to the Michigan Parole Board in 2010 and revealed that he and the prosecution's star witness, a guy named Fred Mitchell, were the ones who were really responsible for the death of Gregory Harris, and that Richard Phillips had absolutely nothing to do with it. And so we got the transcript of the 2010 Parole Board hearing and found out that's what Richard Palumbo had done. And then we went to see Mr. Palumbo. Students and I met with him, and he confirmed the story that he was in fact involved in the murder of Gregory Harris, but that it was carried out and orchestrated by Fred Mitchell, who ended up being the prosecution's star witness against Richard Phillips. And he confirmed again that they didn't even know Richard Phillips yet. The murder happened on June 26, 1971, and they didn't even meet Richard Phillips until about a week later at a July 4th barbecue.
That parole hearing was in 2010. When did you get that tip?
2014.
So we're talking 4 years since that came out.
Right. And so then we went to see Mr. Phillips, and he knew that he had been framed by Fred Mitchell, and he assumed that Richard Palumbo had also been framed by Fred Mitchell. And so he didn't know until we told him. In fact, we talked to him before we revealed to him what the information we had learned. He talked about Richard Palumbo, assuming he was innocent too. And then we revealed this information to Richard Phillips, and he was taken aback, to put it mildly.
I was going to say that moment must have been jaw-dropping.
So more than 40 years later, you know, he learns the true story of what actually happened on June 26, 1971.
And then what then? Walk us through the process of what it took from that point to get him to be able to walk outside as a free man.
Well, the students and I did a lot of research. Among the other things we wanted to do was we knew that there might be a claim that perhaps Richard Palumbo and Richard Phillips had colluded in this story. And so we wanted to make sure that wasn't true. And so we got prison records from the Department of Corrections showing that these guys had not been in the same prison since the early 1980s, which again was consistent with the fact that Richard Phillips didn't know. Under Michigan law, you can use a polygraph examination in support of a motion for relief from judgment. So we had Mr. Phillips polygraphed, and he passed the polygraph with flying colors. And we got the original trial records and original police reports, as much of them as we could get our hands on, and fly-specked them and looking for all of the inconsistencies pointing to Fred Mitchell as the real killer. And what we saw was that Fred Mitchell's testimony was a pack of lies. I mean, it was internally inconsistent. The story he told the police – was dramatically different than the story he told at a preliminary hearing, and then the story he told at the preliminary hearing was dramatically different than the story he told at a trial. This is a guy who couldn't keep his story straight. And the more we learned, the more obvious it was that Palumbo was telling the truth, that Fred Mitchell was your killer. He had just gotten out of prison for an earlier homicide. He had a motive to kill Gregory Harris because he told other people while he was in prison that he was going to kill Gregory Harris because Gregory Harris, he believed, had stolen money from Fred Mitchell's mom. And then a few weeks after Gregory Harris disappeared in June 1971, Fred Mitchell was arrested. He was a felon, a convicted killer in possession of a gun. And that gun was of the same type that was used to kill Gregory Harris. And then a year later, in early 1972, just about the same time that Gregory Harris's body was found in Oakland County near Troy, Fred Mitchell was arrested again, this time for an armed robbery. And he says, so he's in big trouble. He's going back to prison for a long time. And he says to the authorities, give me some help on this armed robbery charge and I will help you solve this murder case where you just found the body. And so he had an explanation for everything. The explanation didn't make any sense, but he had an explanation like why he had the gun that was used to kill Gregory Harris. And he had a story that just didn't work.
It's just as you spell these things out, David Moran, it seems as plain as the nose on my face. Of course, Richard did not commit this murder and Fred did. How did the lies about the lies not trigger suspicions?
Well, that's a great question. I've had a number of students, about half a dozen students, who read the trial transcript in this case, and they all came to me and said almost exactly the same thing is, how did the jury convict? This guy was so obviously lying and he couldn't keep his story straight. And I actually had an assistant prosecutor tell me this at one point too. He said, I've read the transcript and I don't understand how the jury convicted. And so eventually we took this case to court and we were in front of Judge Kevin Cox and Richard Phillips testified. And we presented the transcript of the testimony of Richard Palumbo from 2010. And Judge Cox granted the new trial. And then just about the same time, the Conviction Integrity Unit got started at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. And by this point, the prosecution had filed an appeal to the Michigan Court of Appeals from Judge Cox's decision granting the new trial.
So the prosecution is still trying to keep him in jail.
The prosecution is still trying to keep him in jail. And in December, we got him out. We got a trial lawyer now on the team, Gabby Silver, who's a very prominent and well-regarded trial attorney in Detroit. And we added her to the team when we won the new trial, and she worked on the bond motion, and we got Richard out of jail in December of 2017. And then in January 2018, the new Conviction Integrity Unit came online.
And that unit's mission is to do what?
Their mission is to look at old convictions and see whether they should concede relief. Meaning agree that somebody like Richard Phillips should get out of prison and stay out of prison. And so they filed a motion to stay the appeal. In other words, put the appeal on hold while we look into it. And the Conviction Integrity Unit looked into it. They interviewed Phillips, they interviewed Richard Palumbo. They looked back the old records and they even spotted something we missed, which was in his testimony, Fred Mitchell claimed that Richard Phillips and Richard Palumbo had this meeting a few weeks before the murder where they planned it out and that Fred Mitchell, was somehow privy to this meeting where the murder of Greg Harris was planned out. But they noticed something we missed, which was that Richard Palumbo actually was paroled from a prior conviction he had the day before the murder. So that meeting couldn't possibly have taken place and that story had to be a lie. And so that combined with all the other lies that we had already proven, I think convinced them that Fred Mitchell was a liar and that he was the murderer.
What happened to Fred Mitchell? Where is he now?
He died years ago.
Okay.
He died many years ago.
What should this story you're telling us of Richard Phillips' wrongful conviction, what should it tell us about our criminal justice system?
Well, it's what we started to learn in the late 1980s, early 1990s, which is the criminal justice system is not as reliable as we thought. We have a good criminal justice system, but it's not perfect and mistakes get made. And we need to have procedures and safeguards in place to make it more reliable. And so this case is a good example. If you go back and look at the more than 2,000 exonerations that are now cataloged on the National Registry of Exonerations, if you just Google National Registry of Exonerations, you can read about literally more than 2,000 exonerations, including Richard Phillips. And they basically all break down into a set of causes, such as bad eyewitness identifications, false confessions, bad science. And this case is one of them. and that is incentivized testimony. Somebody who has a very clear incentive. He's facing probably life in prison for an armed robbery conviction very shortly after getting out of prison for a killing. He's got every incentive to make a deal to throw other people under the bus. And so we need safeguards to make sure the jury is aware that they should be extremely skeptical about believing somebody like Fred Mitchell. And since the DNA exoneration started in the 1990s, and we've had more and more of these cases, and more than a quarter of these cases, I believe, have involved incentivized testimony, we've had so far just one state that I'm aware of, which is Illinois, which has passed rules that allows judges to exclude incentivized testimony unless there are reasons to believe it.
So that's a big step. You know, you have helped a lot of people at the Michigan Innocence Clinic. Where does Richard's case fit into this clinic's legacy?
He's number 18. So we have now exonerated 15 men and 3 women who between them served about 260 years, I think, of wrongful incarceration. So the average time between conviction and exoneration for these people is more than 10 years. Richard's case obviously drove the average up. Richard's case, he did more than 45 years in prison, which is the longest that anyone has served and been exonerated according to the National Registry of Exonerations. But his case is special because it shows that there's really no point back in time beyond which we can say, well, we don't need to go there, no matter how far they are. And in fact, there was an exoneration in Nebraska recently, a few years back, of a guy who was convicted in 1957. Now, he had been paroled decades ago, so he didn't serve as much time in prison as Richard. But even cases that far back need to be examined if there's somebody still alive that we can help.
David Moran, co-founder of the Michigan Innocence Clinic, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.